Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and 2 tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
We are back. This is the Flow Track Podcast. It's Friday afternoon here in the United States. Thanks, everybody, for joining. I'm Kevin. He is Gordon. The email address, flowtrackpodcast@gmail.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on our YouTube channel, Flow Track Podcast. This is the Brussels Recap Pod, a.k.a. Gordon finally got something right and needed a tweet about it. Welcome, everybody.
Hey, Diamond League regular season is officially complete. We now just have the Diamond League Finals, which will be next week. I guess, when are they?
Next weekend.
Week. Mm-hmm. September 8th and 9th in Zurich, in Germany. It's been a good regular season of elite running. We still have some continental tours, especially a bunch live on Flow. We have five different continental tours live on Flow. So that should be exciting. But we're here to talk about what happened in Brussels. Kind of finalizing the fields for the Zurich finals. I kind of have a few takes on what we saw transpire and what the fields we're going to get now that everything is kind of buttoned up, ready to go for the final Diamond League.
Yeah, it looks like Wednesday, Thursday, 2 days in Zurich next week. The Wednesday session, some field events, and then they're doing that 5,000 on the not on the normal track. And then the Thursday is just going to be a whole bunch of events because it's way more than a normal Diamond League because you're having to do both genders and all the Diamond League events. So it's going to be action packed there on Thursday. Yeah. Why don't we start first with the 200, which was headlining this meet, even though it did not necessarily have the fastest woman in the world in Elaine Thompson-Herah. Still had a good field, as we talked about in the preview show. You still had Christina Boma, Sharika Jackson, Dean Asher-Smith, and of course, Sha'Carri Richardson. And as we expected, it came down to a battle between Boma and Jackson, Gordon, with Boma doing her patented final 100, final 75, huge push at the end to catch Jackson and win in 21.84 to Jackson's 21.95. Kind of went to form, the form that you had. Credit to you for getting that top the top four, really, not just the top one, I was going to say, but for nailing this prediction.
Yeah, watching Christine run is always an entertaining venture. It goes way back when she had that viral 200-meter run where the most incredible kick we've ever seen in a 200. We didn't know that 200 meters have kicks. But watching every time she runs, she's never in the lead after the first 100 meters, and she just kicks like a wild animal down that final stretch. And it makes you think that, like, she's always just chasing the front runner at the 100-meter mark, and then that's basically all the effort she's going to put to win. What I want to know is what happens when the person she's chasing is, like, much, much faster? Or, I mean, we kind of saw potentially with Elaine Thompson in that Olympic final.
Yeah, we saw that.
She's now running consistently 21.8s, 21.9s. I want to see her I guess 21-8. She's run 21-8 one, two, three times in like 2 month span or month and a half span. So I'm excited to see what will happen when she starts chasing even faster people and not being just running for the win. Because right now I don't know. I want to know what her ceiling is. Like, what do you think her ceiling is? She's now run 21-81, 21-84, and 21-84. What do you think her ceiling could be?
I don't know. I don't know necessarily what her ceiling is, but she's getting good competition. Let's be clear. Like, when she was running 21-8, she was chasing a 21-5 woman, and then she was running down Gabby Thomas in that race, who had run 21-6. In this race, she's going against Sharika Jackson, who's run really fast as well too. She's competing in the right era, not necessarily to win, but to employ this strategy to do the exact thing that you're talking about, where you have people that you're gunning for in that last 100. The main thing is age and relative inexperience. She's so young. She's still new at this. I think the improvement's going to come less from having people to chase, although that seems to be a given just how good this era is, and more just the experience. And then if we get another year where Thompson Hurrah is running like we know she's capable of, so she's putting the marker down at 21.5, then we're going to see. I just wonder if she can she minimize that gap, that first 100. You know who it reminds me of to a certain extent is men's side of things, NCAA. Well, he went on and run the Olympics, Joseph Fanboulay, who would dig himself into that huge, huge deficit and then just come storming back the last 100. Not exact parallels here, but just the idea of, hey, okay, you don't need to be the best starter of the group, but can you keep it close or closer so that way you can take advantage of the fact that your last 100 is just that much better than everybody else's?
Yeah, it's a good comparison, seeing what Joseph Fanboulay did for Florida. I think he'll probably be back. You think he'll be back? He'll probably be back next year, right? Well, he's a sophomore. I don't think he's going pro yet. We'll see.
No idea.
I'm sure Coach Holloway is going to make sure. Hopefully he stays. He doesn't want to lose Grant and Fanboulay in back-to-back seasons. That won't be too good. But I'm sure he probably has like 10 other guys who are ready to step up. Back on track to the women's 200. Sharika Jackson, I thought that she would give more of a challenge to Christine in this race. I feel like she has more than what she ran here. She still ran well. Like, she still ran 21.95. Like, it's no joke. Every time you break 22, it's a no joke race. But seeing the way she was running, you know, especially in the 400 and the 100, she's kind of, you know, we kind of compare her a little bit to Fred Curley. We're waiting for her to have, I mean, she already has had it. She's running 21.8 this season, but I feel like she has the ability to be able to throw down a 21.7 or a 21.6. Maybe she's saving it for the Diamond League final, but I think because we didn't get to see her in the Olympic final because of her pulling up in the semis, I'm just waiting first round. I'm just waiting for Sharika to have her like her big moment in running a fast 21.7, 6, or 5.
Sure. Well, 21.5s are rare. Let's not count on that every race. But going back to your point about Mboma and needing someone to chase, perhaps Jackson could have benefited from a fast starter here to pull her out to give her an even bigger lead, and that wasn't there because we didn't have Thompson Hurrah or even a quick starter like Fraser Price. It was a solid race for her. As you mentioned, sub 22, nothing to sneeze out there. Even Dean Asher Smith, 22-0, based on the season that she's had, is a solid race. You're just going against the Olympic silver medalist in this case, in Christine Mboma. So you need a lot of things to go right if you're going to get that win, or you need to be Elaine Thompson Hurrah, who was not there. So I thought solid race for Jackson. She's been really consistent all year, both in the two and the one, save for that one mess up at the Olympics in the first round in the 200. So yeah, I thought she would win. 10th behind doesn't surprise me just based on how solid Mboma's looked this whole season, basically.
Yeah, and Dina Asher-Smith getting a slight season's best improvement, comes in third. She's been dealing with the injuries. She hasn't had the type of year she wanted coming off of 2019, but she's fit. You're running 22 flat. That should be good. And I'm sure we'll talk about this later on. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what she does the rest of her season with only a few races left. But the women's 200 is looking pretty thin. Last time I checked, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, based off of who actually is going to be in the Diamond League 200 meter final. But ultimately, this race was the second time, the first time we get to see Sha'Carri Richardson on the track after some will say humiliating performance she had in Prefontaine. It may be humiliating, but it also was very controversial. Everything from the post race, the pre race, to the performance. When Sha'Carri Richardson runs track and field, people watch. People watched here. She gets fourth. I thought she would get fourth. I predicted she would get fourth. But let's go through a little timeline for Sha'Carri. So after she finished ninth in pre and had the crazy post-race interview, she did eventually tweet, the only way up from ninth, the only way from ninth is up. And she kind of held on to that mantra. As if we kind of, on the start line, she put up nine fingers to say, hey, this is my new brand. The only way up is ninth. Really, what she was showing was, I'm going to finish fourth and giving you a high five at the same time. That's what she was doing. It was like fourth place, high five, right? So that's what she was really predicting, not
interesting.
Ninth from pre. She was all over her, you know, Instagram doing a thing. After she finished ninth, she tweeted out feeling delicious, which I don't know what that means. That the feeling.
Wait, was that today? Delicious.
This is today. Oh, I don't know. How does one feel Listen, delicious?
You skipped a key part on the timeline of today, which is those of us who listen to the Drake album, the release at midnight, Sha'Carri got name checked on the Drake album. So all that happened within this 24-hour span as well, too. That's pretty big. First name basis now.
That is true.
I woke up and she was trending on Twitter and I said, oh no. Oh no, oh no, oh no, what happened? What happened? What happened? What happened? It was right there in that right column on Twitter. And then I clicked on it, and it's just because Drake mentioned her in his album that went up at midnight last night. We'll have to have Justin Knight, the foremost Drake fan of anybody in the track and field world, come on and give an evaluation of the album. I just thought it was just interesting. She's first name basis now because he said Sha'Carri in the song.
She's in the same category now as Jay-Z. Jay-Z was on both the Kanye album and the Drake album. People were making a joke about that. And now Sha'Carri can be like, hey, I'm name dropped by Drake, but I'm also in Kanye promotional for headphones or whatever. And that whole thing. Who else can finish fourth in a Diamond League and at the same day be like in the relevancy of Drake and Kanye? I mean, I knew she was going to finish fourth. This tweet, someone tweeted this out. I don't know who did it, but someone who owns the FlowTrack Twitter password tweeted out Gordon's prediction of finishing fourth. But regardless of all the outside noise of her Prefontaine, the ban, all this stuff, this is what we thought. You thought she'd get third or fourth. She ran 22:45, so she was very far away from the other elite athletes. What is your kind of read on Sha'Carri as the athlete, the 200-meter, 100-meter runner, now going forward, now that the Prefontaine race is done, now her next latest race is 22:45.
Mm-hmm. Well, she did say the only way she has to go is up from ninth, which was true. Like, this was a better race, objectively, than what happened at the Prefontaine Classic. I think we tend to lump the one and two together from
I think we lost you right there for a moment. You back though? Okay. Colt, we good? Oh, we're back.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I'll take two on that. I'll take two on that one. Yeah, so she's always been stronger in the one than the two, as I mentioned before. I think we are looking at that gap that she had mid-season and glossing over that. And it wasn't a planned gap in the mid-season, and it was 2 months off. Essentially. So I don't think we can read too much into what's happening in these post-Olympic meets, basically. I think she's going to come back next year. I think she's going to be fine. I think in the 100, she's going to be better. This was not a disaster, but this was also not early season Sha'Carri as well. But I also don't think early season Sha'Carri just disappeared all of a sudden. That's not, there's no reason to think that. Clearly, there should be, you know, all the travel, training, everything is not in line to where it was in the beginning of the season. Why would it be? I think if she had run, say she had switched places with Asher Smith, ran 22-0, right, and was a 10th back of Jackson, it wouldn't have got the publicity of, oh my gosh, Sha'Carri's back, she got the win, but that would have been a huge result. As it stands now, 22 mid, not a great result, but again, she's out there still just competing, which I think at this point in the season is good enough, because there's nothing she could do in this part of the season that would make up for not being able to run at the Olympics anyway. So healthy, move on. Maybe she runs another race or two in Europe, but to think that she's going to go away and she's not going to be a factor in 2022 because of the Prefontaine Classic and this Brussels Diamond League meet. Like, I know people like to pile on her, but that's ridiculous. She'll be back next year. She may not be running 10 fives like Elaine Thompson, but she's not going to be getting last. She's not going to be running 22 highs and 200s next year. I think she'll be fine.
Do you think she'll be eyeing indoor and potentially try to like make a world indoor team and kind of, because you know, the Jamaicans don't really,
Jamaicans don't really focus much on indoor.
They don't focus much on indoor. That could be an opportunity to kind of get your name back at the top of the, like, sure, you know, she could like boast, hey, I'm world champion. And Jamaica's be like, there's no indoor Olympics. We'll meet you in Eugene type thing. You know,
her strength though is the second half of that 100. So I don't know if you could pencil her in for a gold medal in the 60 either. All I know is everything that she's done this year has not gone to script. So when it was good, it was great. And when it was bad, it was not good. Right? There's never been just this steady Sha'Carri performance. And I think that's tough to manage, especially when you've only been a pro for a couple of years. And especially when you're going against two all-time greats, which is what Thompson Hurrah and Fraser Price are, right? And then you look at Mboma and Jackson, and okay, maybe they're not all-time greats, but they're really, really good. Like, having two sub-22 people in a race, like, go back and look through the Diamond Leagues of years past. That's hard to do. In many cases, Asher Smith's 22-0 would have won Diamond League 200. So there's a lot here going on beyond just, oh, yeah, she got confident and then lost. And I think clean slate 2022, she'll be fine.
I want to do a little mini rant here. Kind of goes back to my overarching view of the state of our sport in track and field. You know, a lot of athletes and fans were tweeting out, hey, make sure you keep track, pay attention to our sport when it's not the Olympics, you know, hey, just so you know, we also have Diamond Leagues, or we also have World Championships. We'll love to see that energy then. And I think I now have visual proof that what World Athletics' solution to making our sport relevant is not working. Their idea of keeping the sport relevant, obviously, is having an Olympics, having World Championships. And they do a great job at being very popular, and all the athletes are all in to try to win world titles and Olympic titles. But the way they try to keep ourselves relevant is having a pro circuit, aka the Diamond League. We have all these regular season Diamond Leagues. We're going to have a Diamond League final. We're going to crown a Diamond League champion. We're going to say the Diamond League champion has a bye to the World Championships. We're putting all of our eggs in the Diamond League structure. So while administrators and World Athletics governing bodies are presenting the Diamond League as a very important thing, the athletes clearly do not see it that way. And if the athletes don't treat the Diamond League like it's important, why should the fans? And the best way to visualize that the athletes do not give a shit about the Diamond League is when we look at the women's 200 meter Diamond League final. This has been the greatest women's sprint era we've ever seen, with the three Jamaicans, Sha'Carri doing her thing, Dina Asher-Smith coming off a world championship. You have, you know, Talu. The women's sprints is at the best it can ever be. And this is who's going to be in the Diamond League 200 meter final. Talu, okay, that makes sense. Dina Asher-Smith, that makes sense. I should stop saying names.
Munjinga Kambunji.
Kambunji, the Swiss athlete.
Kambunji.
I don't know. Jackson makes sense. But then we have someone, Beth Dobbin, Desiree Bryant, Patrice Masalinghi. Here's a list of people who aren't in the Diamond League final. Travis, you can see it here. Christine Mboma, the silver medalist. Shawnee Miller-Uebo, one of an all-time great 200-meter runners. Elaine Thompson-Hurrah, the gold medalist. Blessing Okabari, she's cheating, so doesn't count. Gabby Thomas, the bronze medalist. Shelly Ann Fraser-Price, Jenna Prandini, Sha'Carri Richardson. I could go on and on and on. If these athletes cared about the Diamond League, the number one athlete, number two athlete, number three athlete, number four athlete, show this graphic on the screen. Number six athlete, number seventh athlete, 8, 9, 11, 11, 4. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 of the top 10 athletes who did not try to make a Diamond League final. If 80% of your best athletes aren't trying to make your championship final, that means they don't care about it.
Well, hold on.
I mean, it is what it is.
I mean, Thompson-Hurrah and Fraser-Price are going to run the 100. So they have reasoning. Mboma is.
They don't have reasoning. That's not reasoning. Did they say that? Did they say no to the 200 at the Olympics because they were running the 100?
If we're going to compare it to that standard, then that's fine. I'm just saying it's not like they disappeared here. So there's always going to be an event or two where this happens, where the bottom falls out by the end of the year. But Thompson-Hurrah and Fraser-Price are still running. Mboma is next one in. So if someone scratches, she'll get bumped up. It's not like Richardson's not running or not trying to go. You mentioned Richardson. It's like she didn't qualify. That's why she's not there.
That's not why. There was multiple opportunities for her to run a 200, and she chose not to do it. Like,
She was suspended let's not use Richardson as a standard.
How many Diamond League 200s was Sha'Carri Richardson suspended from competing in?
Right.
None.
I'm saying is that's not the best standard to use when judging this event. I'm not saying it's star-studded by any means,
The standard is someone named, I spelled the name wrong in this graphic, Beth Daubin, who's the 52nd fastest 200-meter runner in the world, finds a way to get in because all the best athletes are like, nah, I don't want to do the 200 in this city. I don't want to do the 200 in that city. I'm all focused on something else. And that results in 8 of the best 10 athletes not in the final because those 8 athletes did not prioritize running the Diamond League circuit. They didn't prioritize it because it's not important to them. They prioritized their
national. Is this new to you? I don't get why is this new to you.
No, it's not new to you.
But I'm saying it's just.
Why are we going to act like it's important if this happens? We shouldn't act like it's
Marcel
important.
Marcel Jacobs hasn't run since the Olympics. Fastest man in the world, right? And he called it a day. I think that is probably a bigger issue than like Fraser-Price and Thompson-Hurrah still running, but not running this one specific race. I think it's a combination of things. I think you're right on one hand. It's just they don't. But the prize money is not enough of an incentive, clearly. The buy is not enough of an incentive, especially if you're at a if you're not from Jamaica, US, Kenya, Ethiopia, you know, on a country where you're going to put three superstars, you know, you could even say Great Britain in certain events. The buy is not enough of an incentive. The money, like I said, is not enough of an incentive. You throw in the fact that it's post-Olympics, and then this is what you get. But you look at the 100, you look at the 400, it's obviously missing some names, but it's stronger. It's stronger. It's not as bad as this one. You're right. The bottom fell out or is falling out on this one. But if Mboma gets in, right, then you have at least two of the top, well, and with Asher Smith, if you're going to say that she's a top five 200-meter runner in the world, then you have three of the top five. Yeah, you're missing the star power there with Thompson-Hurrah and Fraser-Price. I'm not arguing with you on that. All I'm saying is this just seems to be the standard because those incentives are not strong enough to get the athletes to compete all the time.
I just know this isn't a problem in tennis and it's not a problem in golf. They show up for their regular season.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just want to...
But I'm saying
it's just frustrating.
Like, yeah. Thompson-Hurrah and Fraser-Price have shown up this year, though. Again, may not be 100% attendance, but I think if you took the average or the expected amount of times that they would compete against each other, I think they've put it out there several times. Maybe not enough.
Yeah, I mean,
because we always want to see more. That's the problem. You always want to see more. But let's just simplify this a bit. are we going to see Warholm versus Benjamin in the 4-meter hurdles? Let's not talk about top eight. Let's just talk about the matchups that we want to see. Are we going to see Warholm? Are we going to see Muhammad versus McLaughlin in the 4-meter hurdles? Right.
Nope.
So
we see Steve Gardner in the 400. No.
Right. Right. Are we might we
see Grant Holloway in the 110 hurdles? No.
Right.
We see Paul Chelimo in the 5K? No. We're gonna see a lot. You
bump Paul Chelimo way up there. That was just like,
well, he's a little bit
better. We were like Warholm, McLaughlin, Holloway, and like Paul Chelimo. Are we gonna see him or not? What's up? I think Jakob's done for the year too. I think he said so. You're right. In
Jakob's
terms
not doing the Diamond League final.
I don't think. Well, I know he pulled out of Brussels. I saw some article about how they were, him and Warholm were both pulling out of Brussels. Maybe he will do the Diamond League final. I'll check on that to make sure. But I mean, Safwan Hassan's still running, right? She's still running. But would we blame her if she didn't run the Diamond League final? No, because she doesn't need it. The prize money is not enough of an incentive. And again, and she doesn't need the buy. But my point is, aside from the eight who are going to make this Diamond League final, you can just look at, okay, what are the, forget the top eight fields, just who are the matchups we want to see right now, and we're not gonna get them in. Like, I would love to see Jacobs run again in the men's 100, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
100%. And we have,
and I know we would have saw Jacobs running against the best if we had a dime only, if we only had basically the four major system. But you know, I've been talking about that forever. It's just like this idea that like we're going to create this Diamond League circuit and there's this point system and people are going to care about where they are ranked in the point system. If the athletes don't care, why are we doing it? We're creating a we're creating a system that no one cares about. Like, basketball players care about if they're top eight or not top eight because they want to make the playoffs and they want to win NBA titles. That's why they have standings, and everyone knows the standings matter. But in this situation, the Diamond League standings just don't matter because the best athletes don't care where they fall. Like, oh, I'm not in. Okay, whatever. You know? And it's just another track meet. But like, we need to stop making the Diamond League just another track meet. And in order to make it not another track meet, you need to find a way to make the being the best in the Diamond League equivalent to being a world champion. And we're not doing that.
Well, because when is the season over? Is it the Olympics? This is the Diamond League. Because you're talking about regular season. Like, what is it this year? It's a valid question.
Well, I mean the
pinnacle is the pinnacle is the Olympics. Now we're into this weird all-star game section of the season. I mean, if you were like the track commissioner, right? I think what you, this would be the Gordon Mack plan, if I'm guessing. Basically, you take the Olympics. Well, I know. This should probably be the Kevin plan, but I'm going to give this one to you for free. Because, listen, you predicted that women's 200 third place finish when nobody thought you could. Now, no one would go for this plan. I'm just going to put that aside. But just say track had 100% collaboration amongst meet directors. The Gordon plan would be collect, pool all that money from all those post-Olympic diamond meets, put it into one meet, do it 3 weeks after the Olympics, where you get every single person from the Olympic final, essentially, back to race again as a Diamond League final. That's what you would do.
No, I wouldn't do that. I would take
all
the money and I put it into three meets. And one of the meets will be held in February. One of the meets will be held in April. And one of the
February's over. That's too much money. I'm talking, you don't have enough money to do that.
No, it's not. No. It's not too much money.
It's my hypothetical. I'm drawing the line right there. You don't have that much money. You have a lot of money, but not that much money. Sorry.
No. The season starts in February, and the season, basically, you have a major in February, a major in the spring, a major in the summer, which is the Olympics every 4 years, and when it's not the Olympics, it's the World Championship, and then a major in early fall, and you tie it.
I know, but
to
that's too much restructure.
You need to restructure.
That's too much.
Get rid of no. It's not. You have
it's
it. You know where you do it. You do it in Tokyo in February. You tie it to the Tokyo Marathon. You do it in London in April, and you tie it to the London Marathon. You do it at whatever the circular rotation of wherever world championships or Olympics in the summer, and then you do it in Berlin for the with the Berlin Marathon. Boom.
Yeah, but
and
that's
then you just go.
That's much too dry. Like, I'm not disagreeing with it, but I'm saying that's way too much upheaval. Mine is upheaval, but it's a minimal level of upheaval to where you could see it actually happen. Where it's like, why prolong the inevitable of all these meets where you have 3 stars at this one and 2 stars at that one and 5 stars over here? Just get them all together. Let's just do one more showcase post Olympics, put all the money and prestige into it, which is what Zurich is supposed to be. But by the time we get to it, I think we've lost a lot of people along the way. And I like qualifying for it, but that you see the downside of that as well too. We got to keep moving though here. We got to keep going.
Okay.
Because we got other races to talk about. Men's 100.
Tell you, man.
Your opinion. Men's 100.
Fred Curley.
994.
Fred Curley has officially, in my opinion, I mean, he's already been doing this, but he has now passed a consistency test, you know, where day in and day out, you know, when Fred Curley steps on the track against the best of the best, he's going to finish no worse than third, and he's going to be able to beat the best of the best. And him beating here Bromell in this race, I thought just showed the consistency. You have a bunch of 9-8 guys, the Ferdinand Omawara of Kenya, the Akane Simbene of South Africa, Bromell, Norman, for that matter. There's a bunch of people who are 9-8 guys, and he's like, I'm going to be consistent. I don't need to run 9-8, but I'm going to be better than all of you. And he runs 9.94. I think we were talking about who should be the 100-meter favorite going into next year. I think I'm now willing to say that Fred Curley is the 100-meter favorite. I think Fred Curley has a reason. You have a reason to pick Fred Curley over Coleman because Coleman's going to be rusty. You have a reason to pick Fred Curley over Jacobs, because Jacobs, you could argue, is a flash in the pan, hasn't showed the consistency. There's a reason you can pick him over Noah Lyles, because Noah Lyles hasn't been able to show you can do it in the 100. There's a reason you can pick him over Trayvon Bromell now, because he's now consistently beating Trayvon Bromell ever since the U.S. trials. All of the people who have a say to say that Bromell, Jacobs, Coleman, and Lyles, and DeGrasse, those five, I feel like you now have a legitimate argument to say, nah, Curley, pick Curley. And it wasn't like that even in June when he was finishing third at the Olympic trials.
Yeah.
Remember, he was third at Olympic trials. He wasn't second or almost winning, third. So the viewpoint of Fred Curley was like, yeah, he can gamer, he can find a way to make it. But now it's like, no, he's just straight up, I'll pick him over Bromell. I'll pick him over Baker. I'll pick him over Coleman next year over Lyles. So he's officially, in my mind, I'm now like, he's not a 400-meter runner to me anymore. Today, he's not a 400-meter runner. He's just straight up 100-meter runner, and he's the best in the world. And that's what I think. I mean, he can be a 400-meter runner if he tries doing it, but maybe he'll surprise us and it'll be a shock again. But right now he's just the best 100-meter runner in the world.
Yeah. First man to ever have the Diamond League wins in the 1, 2, and 4. The part that impressed me was just, he came in as the favorite and was still able to prevail. It was one thing to do it under the radar, but having a little bit of expectations and weight on your shoulder and going in and still being able to get a good race out of it was mighty impressive. And I think everybody's now taking note, if they haven't already, at just the versatility, and what he decides to do next year is going to be really fun to watch. What did you think of second and third place in that race, Bromell and Norman?
You know, I'm sure Norman, you could kind of be like, all right, because Norman hasn't really trained for the 100 the way Curley has. So every time Norman just runs decent in the 100, it's kind of more just like an icing on his resume, because he's not trying to be the fastest 100-meter runner in the world. He's trying to get back to being one of the best 400-meter runners in the world, that he's not there yet anymore. So Norman, I give him an A for his performance. For Bromell, I probably give a B-, because you know Bromell can we just think about the Bromile we saw in April and in May and in June? Mm-hmm. You could not imagine this scenario. And that's what makes Fred Kerley's win so much more impressive, because he's taken over a mantle that you thought just Bromile had on lock, because Bromile mm-hmm. had the experience. He was running consistently. He had never lost a race in like 10 straight races. Like, look at that. If you look at this graphic of Bromile, look at all the ones. First. And then all of a sudden, after Olympic trials, you know, he gets fifth at Monaco. You're like, ooh, that's weird. And then ever since then, fifth. You got that first randomly, but fifth, fourth, third, fourth, second. So that consistency kind of just went out the door. And I'm sure if you look at Fred Kerley, it's gone to, he was going the other direction. It was going the other direction of third, second, third to now first. Yeah. So
I think there's positives for both of them, because Bromel looked better today than he did in Tokyo. I think that's definitely true. And then when you look at Kerley from the perspective of this is the Olympic silver medalist and orient it around that instead of this is a guy who's dropping down from the 400 and I'm a 100 meter specialist, I should beat this guy. You can kind of downplay your effort. But Bromel, the start looked better. That back half doesn't look like it did early in the season. I don't know if that's going to change or if that can change. But I think he looked a lot better than he did in Tokyo. And then for Norman, again, so I'm looking at Norman like a 400-meter runner. And a 400-meter runner just finished 4/100ths behind the Olympic 100-meter silver medalist. Again, take the names out of it. That's a pretty impressive feat, isn't it? If you told him that going in, hey, postseason, you're going to run within a lean of the person who wins silver in the Olympic. Like, imagine if that was Lyles, right? Or a Coleman.
Yeah.
Or a DeGrasse. Like, wipe out the last couple months from our memory, because I think it skews it. But Fred Kerley is obviously proven at this point. And Norman, sub 10, that close to Kerley, that close to Bromel, right in there, as you mentioned, beating a lot of sub 10 guys. I think that's a good result for him. I hate to give everybody A's, but I thought everybody got something out of this race.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give A plus to Kerley, B minus to Bromel, and an A for Norman. That would be my grade.
I would really love to see, and we're not going to get it because he didn't run any this year, but I would love to see Norman in a 200 right now. That would be fascinating to me. Michael Norman in a 200. As it stands right now, I think he's the first man out in the quarter, but he's in the 100 for the Diamond League final.
Who, Norman?
Michael Norman, yeah. I think he's in the 100, and he's last man out in the – or first man out, excuse me, in the quarter.
Well, so, if Jacobs doesn't run, that means...
Well, he's the second to last. He's in the 100, basically, is what I'm saying. He's in the 100. Yeah. It's the quarter. Well, we can talk about the quarter now, because Michael Chiari almost made me look like a genius by breaking 44 seconds. I said his 44-second streak would get snapped. Instead, it got extended. But he got a PB 44.03. His last 100 was something to behold. He was just waiting. And then slammed on the gas in the last 100. He just keeps improving. So I'm going to double down. I'm going to say he does lose his sub 44 streak at the next meet, Diamond League final. That's where we're going to see Michael Chiari sub 44. 43 is coming.
Yep. Tweet it out sooner than later. I agree with you. I'll ride you with this. He's definitely going to run 43 seconds in that Diamond League final. And with no Stephen Gardner, you got to think that he can win. Mm-hmm. And if he wins, you know, all the 400 meter runners in the U.S. celebrate, because he gets taken off of the list of people you have to beat at the U.S. championships in 2022. Mm-hmm. Because if you were to win a Diamond League, he gets a bye. And if you're running 44.03, you know, he's fit. He looks like he's just warm. Like, he's getting ready for one last big punch in that Diamond League final. So I think he's going to run like 43.7, I bet. 43.7, 43.8 in that Diamond League final, I bet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I talked about how he looked like he was moving through the rounds with these different meets, and this was the final, and the last one was the semi. So I hope, for his sake, he's got one more card left to play. Maybe the conditions will be a little bit better in Zurich and he can do it. But as it stands, he runs his 44 second streak to 12 races in a row where he's run between 44.03 and obviously sub 45 on the end. Yeah, he had one That's 45 a- high up there in at the USATF Grand Prix in Eugene at the end of April. And then now he's run off 12 in a row. And actually, it's no, wait, what I said was, yeah, so Rovereto was the first round. I guess this Brussels was the semi, so then Zurich's going to be the final. Although he looked like he's putting everything in it with that last 100. It was a really, really good last push there. So that 400-meter, if we could pull up the 400-meter Diamond League standings, I know we're going to dive into this more. Oh, wait, hold on. Before we do that, now you can go back, Travis. Sorry, my fault. I want to look at that all-time list. So 44.03, he sits 13th now on the all-time list. And if he wants to move up, got to get into those 43 nines. And maybe he can do it in this Zurich final. So we have the folks that are qualified, Karani, James, Zimbrano, Lendor, Bonavacia, McQuala, Norwood, and Cherry. Remember, they only put 7 in this because they don't want to give someone a bad lane. So I don't know if Norman wants to run it. I'm assuming he doesn't. Otherwise, he would have run it today. But you're right. There's a lot at stake in this Diamond League final if you're an American athlete.
And I guess Zimbrano, James, and Cherry, I would argue, are like the top three. I don't see Lendor or Bonavicia or McQuala winning this race. Norwood, even for that matter. So it's going to be like a three-man race. And this is Cherry's basically, this is his U.S. trials. Win this race, and you're going to Worlds. And then he can kind of rest on his laurels throughout all of the spring of 2022.
Yeah, and that's a big thing to note when we move into these Diamond League finals is, yeah, this is your trials. You basically, if you got a spot on that track in Zurich, you got a lane, you have two chances to make the U.S. team. One happens to be in September of 2021, and the other one happens to be in the summer of 2022. But you just did the math, right? I mean, yeah, he's got to win and not get third. But if you're looking at the people who could beat him, I mean, he looked good against Karani today. I'm never going to count out Karani. He's had a phenomenal career, continues to run really well. Zimbrano's solid, but Cherry's in the mix. Cherry's in the mix. So that making that team and all the bonuses that come with it and all the advantages of being able to plan your season accordingly are going to be on the line there. I would be interested if Norman did squeak in, if he would try to do it for that exact reason, because he can't, the 100 meter Diamond League champion isn't going to get anything really. I mean, they'll get money and fist pounds, but they don't get, but a high five. Yeah, exactly. But they're not going to get anything because Coleman already has that bye. Whereas 400, it's a complete game changer. But since he hasn't been running it and he's going to have to wait for a scratch, he'll probably get a bad lane. Maybe he just sticks with 100 and says, listen, I got to be able to get top three next year in the trials.
All I know is that, I mean, this is not happening, but imagine if Norman wins the 100 or something like that. Then we're like, nothing makes sense anymore because now we're all in on Curly. I was kind of thinking
it was going to happen like midway through that race because Bromell and Norman both got off to really good races. And I was thinking, this is going to be, what if this result is just maximum confusion here?
Yeah. So I like it when what we think is going to happen happens because then it's like, okay, things are making sense. Yeah. So
nothing's making sense. We'll see. Okay, there's two more races I want to talk about here. Safwan Hassan came up short in her bid to break her own world record in the miles. She ran 4:14. Won by 6 seconds. It was just a time trial, her versus the clock. Rabbits did a little bit of work, but it was all on Hassan's shoulder. It was just her and the pace lights out there. And just as was the case in the 5K record attempt, looked just like she ran out of gas, Gordon, because there's no doubt that she can run that quickly based on how fast she's run this year. But these time trials on top of the workload that she had in Tokyo just have to be taking a toll on her.
Yeah, take a break, Safwan Hassan. Please, just go home, get a nice book, lay down, watch some Netflix. I don't know.
No, she has to run the Diamond League final. Otherwise, you're going to criticize her. If she doesn't run the Diamond League final, you've pressured her.
No, she's the one person who's like, all right, you can take a break. She's exempt. There are people who take a major off here or there. That's happening here at the US Open. She could be that type of person, but everyone else mm-hmm. needs to go all in on these Diamond League finals. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say about Safana San. The idea that, hey, you need a PB now. After doing your triple, you need a PB. She owns three of the top five marks all time in the mile. It's insane. It's just wild.
Yeah. So Mbaye was second, 421. Lyndon Hall, third. Elise Cranny and Josette Norris were fifth and sixth. Ahead of Spain's Esther Guerrero, who, if people listen to the preview podcast, came in with a PB of 528. Happy to report, Gordon, that Esther Guerrero took 66 seconds off of the world's most misleading personal best to lower it down there to 422. So, again, Hassan will get the headlines, but Esther Guerrero, solid work getting that PB. Keep it moving here. Yeah. Maybe least drop another chunk of time next time. Good strategy.
And she's on pace to be running like 3 minutes in a year or two. Yeah, it's going to be wild. Yeah, and then on the women's 5K side, Nian Samba continues to dominate. And she's winning tactical races. She's winning hard effort races. And she's beating the best of the best. The only one out there right now in the world that can beat her, and I believe in the 3K and up, 3K to 5K, excuse me, is Safana San. So if the only person in the world who can beat you is an all-time generational talent, you're doing something right. And I'm excited. I predicted that she will win at least one global medal in the next 3 years. I think she's going to be due. And it's also a great story in my mind because, again, World Athletics try to kick her out of the sport. And she says, oh, no, I'll just add a few more miles to my training and get really good at the 5K. And it's paying dividends.
I thought she was out of this one. I thought they had broken away. She was at the back of that group of four or five, but she just latched on. And then my brain immediately switches to, okay, she's a 155, 800 meter runner. If she can smell it with 100 to go, she's going to do it. And then Obiri faded back. Obiri needed to be prime-ish Obiri here to win that, right? She needed a 14:20 low or a 14:19, something like that. She didn't have that last little push to really break away from Nian Saba. And that's all Nian Saba needed, was just to stay close until that last 100. And then she could take off. And Tay was right with her in that last race, that last Diamond League 3K that she won. I thought as the distance got longer, it would play against Nian Saba, but this was another solid run. I mean, you look at that mark all time. I looked it up, Gordon. The 14:25 is number 16 all time, which is exactly where she is in the 800. So if we're doing historical comps there, Nian Saba is an 800 meter runner. The exact same amount of people have run faster than her as in the 5K. 3K, she's even better. But yeah, it's going to be fun to watch when her and Hassan eventually tangle in a 5K, 3K, really any distance that she's eligible to compete in. Farther down on the list, though, Gordon, Alicia Monson.
Alicia Monson? Yeah.
Alicia Monson. Alicia Monson runs 14:42. She got ninth in this race. I mean, this is a fast race. 14:42 only gets you ninth, which is number four all time. She sneaks in just ahead of Molly Huddle.
Molly Huddle. Yeah, it's. I think it just shows how times have changed that, you know, if this was 5 years ago, you know, 14:42, it is just rocking the U.S. distance world. But with what Shelby did and Carissa's currently doing and Shannon Roberry at the end of her prime, like, we're kind of seeing what's happening on the world stage with basically the best women in the world are all running 14:20s or faster. It's kind of, you forget how quick 14:42 really is because all the other women are running so much faster. But 14:42, she's young. She's born in 1998. What? I can't do the quick math. What, 24, 23? I don't know how old she is.
23.
Quick math. 23. It's impressive. And you have to assume that she's only going to get better. 14:42 now, maybe by, you know, the 2023 World Championship, she's a sub 14:30 or maybe, you know, type runner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. And on running there with Ritz's group, they had another good performance in the men's, 15 as well too, where she went, where they had Oliver Hoare get second. But yeah, her progression has been incredible. 2020, the canceled year, would have been her senior year. So yeah, I think she's one year out of college. Alicia Monson is. And she was always a really strong closer. Remember? That was her, her bread and butter. And now switching to this time trial. These time trial type races, she's taken to it really well. She's had a couple really fast performances, and she's, you know, have already made a team. So things are going about as good as you could hope for someone who's a new pro. Jumping over to that men's 15, as I mentioned, Oliver Hoare, runner-up to countryman Stuart McSwain. McSwain got a win, Gordon.
Yes.
McSwain
I think it was got a win.
After all the – can we pull up McSwain's season here and just get a look at it? Because he's in every race. He's entered in basically every single men's 1500, men's 3000, and he makes noise when he's there. He's not just chilling in the back of the pack. The announcer says his name. So I just wanted to see his season, just how frequently he runs, because it sure feels like he's just there constantly, but also always being, it seems like, bested. So he got a win early on in Australia. And then if you look at his major competitions, third in Gateshead, second in Doha, fourth in Monaco, seventh the Olympics, and then the win here. He won the Bislett Games. Should have mentioned that. But he got second in pre, and then you go in the 3Ks. He was second in Gateshead, the other Gateshead, and then he was third in Lausanne. So got that win in Oslo, but this was the cherry on the top of the season, we could say, for Stuart McSwain after many, many hard races.
Yeah, and a lot of his second and third place finishes are like 7:28 3K for second, you know, 3:29 1500 for like
second or third.
A 3:40, he got second in the mile running 3:48. It's like
so many moral victories.
Incredible times, but never getting the victory. If we're gonna get a victory here, pretty cool for him. He's gonna keep races honest that we're gonna have in his 1500. We talk about the Centro era when he won his 2016 title, winning it in 350. That is never going to happen again. Obviously, with the emergence of Ingebrigtsen and Cherry, but also having these other guys out there who are going to keep paces honest and make sure no matter what, we are running sub 350 mile pace or sub 332 1500 meter pace.
Exactly. All right, let's wrap it up here. Any other races that stood out to you? We had Ntoya Gul win the 800, Dos Santos win the 4 meter hurdles, Mondo obviously won the pole vault, Visser in the high hurdles.
No. Getting ready, cross country season started. I'm excited about that.
All right, we'll leave it there. That's it.
We'll talk about that next week.
No, we're going to do full Zurich Diamond League. We're going to break down all the fields. You're going to yell at whichever ones aren't legit enough, like which ones passed the Gordon test. That's what we'll figure out.
We'll do a little friendly wager and we see if we can, who can predict the most winners.
Sure. That sounds good.
That's what we'll do.
I'll do that. I don't know how I'm going to beat you because you came up with the most impossible prediction of all time, picking Richardson for third. They're still talking about it in Vegas. It's amazing. Thank you to Travis. Crazy. Thank you to Colt. Thanks to my co-host Gordon. Thanks everybody for tuning in live. You can find the podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen to audio podcasts. We'll be back on Monday morning. Have a good weekend, everyone.